You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Non-Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting to the people of the fourth world from within occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Those of you who are paying attention to the news right now might be aware of the recent attack that has been taking place by the State of Israel against the people of occupied Palestine, otherwise known as the Gaza. Now, those of you who pay attention to the Arabian news realize that Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian Authority, if anybody does recognize them at all, he claims to speak for all Palestinians. He has spoken, but it really doesn't seem to mean anything. And, there's a lot of debate right now over what actually caused this, because according to the New York Times, according to the Washington Post, and most of the Western media, and that includes the British, the Irish, all of the EU papers, no one seems to know. This seems to be the instigation of the Palestinians. No one seems to be talking about a recent assassination of a Hamas leader, head of state. I don't really know exactly what to put this. So this is why we're speaking to Ali, who is we're in contact with from London, UK. He's a Palestinian activist. He's a human rights advocate. And, we're trying to understand, briefly, what's going on here and why the Western press, including the UK and the US press, and the Canadian press, for that matter, are not being as objective as they could be. Ali, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thanks for having me. I just wanted to just correct you on one thing. I'm not Palestinian, but I am in solidarity with Palestine.
Okay. So, from your view from the UK, what exactly is going on? What inspired this? And then, what led the Western press to give the perspective that they're giving?
Well, there's a lot of ground to cover. Let's first go with the timeline of what led to what is happening right now. The Israelis would have us believe that they only attack Gaza as a response to rocket fire. However, if you actually stop and look, you realize that the rocket fire is in a response to Israeli aggression. In fact, Hamas is very keen to have calm. Hamas was enforcing a ceasefire after ceasefire, and every time there was a ceasefire negotiated through a third party, Israel was the one that broke it, not Hamas. Now, I am not here to defend Hamas. I am just here to tell you what the facts are. So looking at what happened to lead to this attack, on November 8th, there was calm before that, and the Israeli occupation forces made an incursion into the Gaza Strip near Khan Yunis and fatally injured a 13-year-old child who was playing football. That happened on the 8th of November. That child died. On the 9th of November, on the 9th of November, that child died. It was Ahmed Abu Daqqa, and rockets were fired. The next day, Palestinian resistance groups attacked an Israeli army jeep near the boundary with the Gaza Strip, injuring four Israeli occupation soldiers, which we can argue about. Rockets, we can't really argue about the right of an occupied people to fight an army. After that, there was a more retaliation by Israel, where they killed 7 Palestinians, including 3 children who were also playing football. Seems children playing football are a great threat to Israel. And after that, there was talk of a truce. And in fact, the Hamas military wing leader who was assassinated was the one in contact with the third party negotiating that truce. But then on the 13th of November, they assassinated him, which Haaretz, an Israeli newspaper, called him, Ahmad al-Jabari, the man who was assassinated, extrajudicially executed, called him Israel's enforcer because he was the one who enforced the truces and the ceasefires that were negotiated. He was the one who kept everyone in check, telling them not to fire any rockets. So that's what led to the beginning of this attack. It is Israel who began the hostilities. And I know that people say, do we really need to care about who started it? Yes, we do, because this goes to the heart of the propaganda that we're being fed, where Israel is always shown as the victim, where you have Israeli spokespeople going on news saying, would any country accept all of these rockets falling on them, completely ignoring the fact that they have had the Gaza Strip under siege for 6 years, that they have occupied the Palestinian territories of the West Bank and Gaza since 1967 under a brutal military rule, that they have ethnically cleansed most of Palestine in 1948, creating one of the greatest refugee populations in the world, only rivaled by the Iraqi refugees from America's war on Iraq. So we need to always go back and look at the facts and dismantle the propaganda and show that in fact Israel is always and has always been the aggressor. They are not the victim. Forgetting the fact that they're the fourth largest army in the world, that they have chemical, biological weapons, that they have F-16s, drones, tanks, nuclear weapons, who, by the way, are not have not been checked by the
IAEA.
IAEA, I always get confused by it. Who have not been checked by the IAEA, they are illegal nuclear weapons. So that's about how it all started. Now about the coverage of the media. To be honest, it's really nothing new. The Western media has had a very, very shoddy record on covering Palestine. They always take the Israeli narrative as fact and tend to repeat it without any criticism, without any real analysis. They don't cover the children who are killed. They don't cover the blockade. And Israel tells us that this blockade is to prevent weapons from coming into Gaza. If that was true, then why do they count the calories that the Palestinians need to eat? Why do they prevent exports? If the blockade is really about preventing weapons from coming into Gaza, then why are there no exports? That's not what the siege is about. The siege is about the punishing of a largely a largely unarmed civilian population within one of the biggest open air, within the biggest open air prison that we have in the world today.
Well, let me ask you this: while we're discussing that, the settlements. So we have two factors that are. We have three factors actually. We have one, Iran. We have the continuous push for Iran, whether it was this administration, the previous administration, the administration before that. We've been hearing the same, you know, rhetorical warnings from, you know, both Labor and Likud. So we have that. That's one. Then we have the settlements. We realize that a new round of settlements have been approved by the Netanyahu government. You know, and then on top of that, you know, we have the controversy of what is supposed to be the recognized Palestinian leadership that nobody actually recognizes. Now, like you said, you know, no one who knows anything at all about the situation, you know, approves of, you know, Hamas. You know, it, you know, for many reasons, you know, be it the idea of Sharia law, be the idea of how women will be treated, the idea even of how non-Zionist Jews would be treated. You know, I mean, we have a lot of questions, and you know, we can say a lot of things about Hamas. But the thing about it is, you know, especially in light of the Mech being removed from terrorist watch lists, yeah, at least as it relates to the West, you know, they are the elected government there. And when you have their leadership being removed, especially being removed through a round of peace talks during a truce, you know, and when on, and like you said, on top of this, anybody who looks at the region, who does the research, the invasions by land groups, the destroying of olive trees, the destruction of entire communities, the kidnapping of Palestinian citizens, you know, the checkpoints and the Israeli only roads. I mean, it is apartheid. We've come to understand that in the West, that, you know, yes, it's the dirty word, but it is apartheid. I mean, to the point where people like Archbishop Desmond Tutu says that it is worse than what happened in South Africa.
Absolutely.
So, okay, you know, looking at these three particular, you know, aspects, what are we in the West who do understand that, you know, given the historical paradigms involved, with not the Arab world, but with the Christian world and their attitude towards Jews? Yeah, and then we look and see what, you know, Israel is doing, which claims to be at one hand a secular state, but on the other hand, it claims to be fighting to remain a Jewish state. And then when we raise the question of genocide, you know, the 1948 UN Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Act of Genocide, written by a Jew, a Polish Jew, Raphael Lemkin. You know, what are we to take from this in the West, when, especially when we look at the Western media, which is not exactly being forthright and objective in his reportage?
Absolutely. I mean, what we have to understand about Israel, right, is that it likes to sell itself as the only democracy in the Middle East. That's what you'll always hear Israeli spokespeople and propagandists say. We are the only democracy in the Middle East. Well, that's plainly false, right? With their problems, Lebanon has been a democracy before Israel was founded. Turkey is a democracy. Right now, we are having great revolutions all over the Arab world, bringing in democracy. But more importantly, Israel itself is not a democracy. Israel is a democracy for the its Jewish population, and still very much for the white Jewish population, because there has never been an Arab Jewish prime minister, for example, of Israel. Black Jewish people in Israel are still mistreated. Let's not talk about the African refugees, because that's a whole other set of Discussing policies that are happening right now, maybe we can have another discussion about the African refugees some other time. But more importantly, like you said, what we have is a state of apartheid. And it is apartheid not only in the West Bank and Gaza, where you have literally, like you said, Jewish-only roads. The army protects the settlers even when they are violent towards Palestinians. We have seen images of the army standing around while settlers shoot at unarmed Palestinians. But you also have an apartheid state throughout historic Palestine, where the Palestinian citizens of Israel, who are the descendants and some of the people who did not leave when Palestine was being ethnically cleansed in 1948, and who now represent about 20% of the population, they themselves suffer great discrimination all the time. They, because they do not serve in the Israeli occupation force, they do not get all of the benefits that are tied with people serving within the Israeli occupation force. You have Arab towns that are completely without proper sanitation, proper roads. Construction permits are very hard to come by for Arabs. There hasn't been a single new Arab town inside Israel since 1948, even though there has been countless new Jewish towns. Also, you have the plight of the Bedouins of the Naqab desert, of the Negev desert, where a village has been now destroyed something along the lines of 40 times. I don't want to give a wrong number, but a crazy amount of number, where they are trying to ethnically cleanse the Naqab of the Bedouins. So they tell them that their villages, where they have lived for generations, from time immemorial, from before Zionists started to emigrate to Palestine, they are told that their villages are illegal. And so they get raised by the Israeli army, but they are refusing to leave. So they come back and rebuild those villages. And then the army comes back and raises them again. So this is the reality of the situation there. You have a division of the Palestinian people. And I wanted to get back to Mahmoud Abbas as well. Mahmoud Abbas represents no one. Mahmoud Abbas, his term as president has expired now, I think, a year ago or 2 years ago, and he hasn't organized new elections. He doesn't represent the Palestinians. However, the West and Israel like him because he is a collaborator. That's what he is. He works, he has security coordination with the occupying forces.
Let me interrupt you for a second, because when we say collaborator, that's a strong word.
Though I am taking the words that I have heard all of my Palestinian brothers and sisters say. Now, maybe you're right. Maybe it's a very strong word. Let's put it this way. His security forces and his political apparatus is coordinates security with Israel, which is the military occupying force. They regularly crush protests. He went on TV a few days ago and caused a lot of controversy when he said that he will not allow any resistance against Israel.
Yeah, there will not be another intifada. Yeah.
From another intifada, and he also gave away his right of return when he talked about returning to the town where him and his family were ethnically cleansed from. He said, I give up my right to return. And the right of return for Palestinians is a central part of the cause. It is, if anything, the most central right that the Palestinians hold on to. There cannot be any resolution, there cannot be any prospect of peace without a resolution of the right of return. Palestinians were forcibly evicted from their ancestral land. They have the right to return there by the UN General Assembly resolution and by human rights. Human rights, the Convention of Human Rights states very clearly that if a people has been forcibly removed from their land, they have the right to return to it. So Mahmoud Abbas does not represent the majority of Palestinians. More importantly, he does not represent any of the refugees who are the majority of Palestinians. Don't forget that the elections for the PA do not allow refugees outside the occupied territories to vote, nor does it allow the Palestinians living inside Israel to vote, who are also part of the Palestinian people. So we're having a very complex situation. At the same time, Israel is turning the West Bank into a series of Bantustans by cutting off certain areas from others, house demolitions, forcing people out, particularly from the Jordan River, from the Jordan Valley, and we're left with this situation. This, if it wasn't so tragic, it would be comical, where people keep talking about Israel's right to defend itself when Israel is the one who is aggressing, and the Palestinians have, it seems, no right whatsoever to defend themselves. No one recognizes any legitimate form of resistance for the Palestinians, because we're told that armed resistance is not allowed, even though armed resistance against occupation is ratified by international law. But fine.
Yeah, it is in several different conventions from the 1940s, right after World War II, and in the 1960s on the right of colonialized peoples to struggle for their independence. Even though within that text, there are certain stipulations, because we have to remember that the Belgians and the French were in on the negotiations for this, that the occupied party, or at least the party that is claiming to be occupied, must be surrounded by, I believe it is 40 or 60 kilometers of open water. So, you know, there's a lot of doublespeak or newspeak involved in this. But we have about a minute left. If you can just tell me, Ali, we understand that there is resistance, public resistance popping up to this along, you know, in the EU. In London, in Paris, in Prague, I understand, in Dublin, there are protests that have been ongoing. There are more protests planned. I understand there are a few protests that will be happening in Canada, the U.S. I understand there's a couple that are going on in Mexico City. What do you think, if you can tell me in under a minute, what do you think the impact would be, if any, of a massive international public response in terms of Israel being called to recognize his own ethics, or at least what it claims to be his ethical standpoint as a democracy, as the only democracy in the Middle East?
Well, I don't expect Israel to respond in any way. Historically, they've never responded to protests. However, the protests are there to put pressure on the Western governments to change their stances. And because our governments are not responding to the crisis in Palestine properly, we are left to have our own form of resistance, and that is the BDS movement. I want to talk very quickly about the BDS movement, which is Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions. This is a call from the Palestinian civil society for everyone in the West to boycott Israeli products and products from companies who profit from the occupation. Go to BDSmovement.net and check out the call. Check out what you can do to help. Join Palestine solidarity campaigns in your cities. Join the protests. The louder we are, the more likely our governments are to listen to us. And if they don't, we can put economic pressure on Israel by boycotting its products. We can put cultural and academic pressure on Israel by boycotting its propaganda through its cultural and academic institutions.
Well, actually, you know, let me extend this for just another minute more. What is the role of Hasbara online? We see that the IDF is having a good time spreading, jokes, misinformation.
It has been terrible, but it's backfiring. The problem with Israel, it seems, is that they really don't understand how the internet works. They really don't understand how social media work. For example, take the IDF spokesperson's account. They have been sounding like a teenage bully who is playing a video game and just acting horribly. They think that they're doing outreach, but in fact they're only showing how morally bankrupt they are at this point, because they are justifying the literal murder of children. Like, we're talking about children being killed, babies. We're not talking about, you know, just a war, or we're talking about 1.7 million people within a besieged tiny space, the most densely populated area on the globe, being bombed by F-16s, by naval warships. They're what social media has done, in fact, is it has helped completely dismantle Hasbara. Now we have people from Gaza who are telling us what's happening on Twitter, on Facebook, sharing images, sharing their testimony, giving, humanizing the side that is never humanized. Because in the Western media, you very rarely get Palestinian voices. You always get Israeli voices, but very rarely do you get a Palestinian speaking. But on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, all you get are Palestinians telling their story, telling their narrative, and their narrative is changing. Even though our governments are not changing, the people are hearing that different narrative. During the protests, up to us saying, "We are with you," saying, "What can we do? We don't know what to do. Our governments aren't reacting properly. We know what's been happening. We've been following. We know that what Israel is doing is unacceptable, but we don't know what to do." And to anyone who feels helpless, who feels like they can't do anything, join Palestine Solidarity. Find your chapter of Palestine Solidarity. Join the BDS movement and spread the word. Go on Twitter, go on Facebook, find those voices of the people from Gaza, from the West Bank, and amplify them. Be a witness. Stand with them in solidarity.
By all means, let's do so peacefully, because, you know, there's women and children in the middle of this, and elders, and you know, there's no need for violence. But, you know, and this is just a personal for me, okay? You know, I'm sick of the violence. I'm sick of the violence, and I'm sick of people who think the violence is okay and that violence is cool and that's the best way to solve a problem. It doesn't solve any goddamn thing.
But to be honest, I don't see any violence that is coming out from the Palestine Solidarity.
No. That's not what I'm talking about. See, I'm talking about, you know, the root of it, because we have a people who are running this government, who are doing this, who are the victims of violence, historical violence. That's what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
It's not even an issue with me over who's right and who's wrong in this. You know, I side with the Palestinian people, not the government, not whatever government is supposedly claiming or may have been voted in. I'm talking about the average person on the street who's just trying to eat, who's trying to get down the street, because that's who nobody's thinking about. I don't give a. I'm not into any religious organization that claims to run the government. I don't support theocracies. I don't give a damn what religion they are. I'm not talking about that. You know, I'm talking about the average, you know, people. You know, we're looking at, you know, not every Jew is a Zionist.
Absolutely.
And it's like people are being forced to, yeah, I didn't mean, you know, hold on for a second. I didn't mean, you know, people are being forced to take sides now. You know, I mean, well, people have always been forced to take sides, you know, and it's like, you know, Jews who really are in no more control over their government than anybody in the Gaza has any control over anything Hamas does, or anybody in the West Bank has any control over what Abbas claims to be doing. You know, I'm just saying that the violence period has to stop. And any Jew who claims to really identify themselves as a Jew, and you can find any honor or any ethics, you know, or any kind of, you know, okay from your God, if you believe in such a thing, that justifies what the hell is going on. And the hypocrisy that comes from all of the Western governments, who, you know, two-state solution. Well, here you have this Abbas character who's calling for the two-state thing, and nobody wants to honor it. It's a joke to begin with coming from him, but the bottom line is, even when it's coming from him, nobody takes it seriously. So that's what I want to point out. You know, I'm tired of watching Al Jazeera and see grandmas who are trying to get home with a bag full of greens. And, you know, the IDF is taking pot shots at them. I'm tired of it. This is what I'm talking about.
And just to go back to just as a final note.
Yeah, in 30 seconds, if you can.
Yeah, about Israel being an apartheid state and knowing that what the Netanyahu government is doing is completely and utterly supported by Israelis. There was a Channel 10 poll where 91% of Israelis support the Gaza operation, and 75% of them wanted to continue. That's the Israeli Channel 10 news.
Yeah, so there's no ambiguity.
There's no ambiguity. Those are numbers that you only get in totalitarian regimes during elections, you know, like, oh, 91% of the people are with that dictator.
Well, we just had a recent poll from the Associated Press about the United States in terms of racism right before the election. It was the same thing. The majority of Americans, which I suppose that they're talking about, you know, white Americans, even though that's not necessarily true. If you go on YouTube and you can see the people who are making complaints about President reelect Barack Obama, you know, just do not like African people, do not like Arabs, do not like Mexicans. You know, if you're not European, you know, you're just wrong. So, you know, we have this paradigm in North America. We have this paradigm in the state of Israel. We have this paradigm in the UK. You know, we have this paradigm. And, you know, when we look at Gaza, you know, I don't know where else we can go with this. I mean, it's a human rights issue. It's an international human rights issue. It's an issue that, you know, in the post-World War II world should not exist. And it's just a goddamn shame, and I'm ashamed because my tax money is going to support this mayhem. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We've been speaking to Ali from London, UK, and we hope to have you on again. And thanks for taking a break today to, you know, give us your thoughts on what's going on.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, everybody. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. This is the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, broadcasting to the international Aboriginal community from occupied North America. Subscribe to our international podcast using our Feedburn RSS feed at Fourth World Radio. And we are carried by an ever-writhing network of independent information providers, not financially hamstrung by the corporatist news model. For more information on the news items and opinions discussed in this internet radio broadcast, please visit our electronic newspaper, aboriginalpressnews.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. You can also leave us a polite voicemail at Aboriginal Media Group via Google Talk, and you can always email our studios at aboriginalradio@lavabit.com. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. AboriginalPress.blogspot.com